This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
It's the Hoffman Show, hour number two here on the Team 980, always live as well on the free Odyssey app. You can catch us on YouTube. We got hot takes flying in the chat at the Team 980 live every single day. All 3 hours. Right now it is time for the thing that we do every single Tuesday at this time. Starts off with the introduction, a proper one. Not only the air horns that you already heard, but it is time for Not My Beat.
Today's top story from the perspective of someone who's there.
You are looking live.
This just in.
Not My Beat.
Mitch Tischler joins us each and every Tuesday, co-host of the Beltway Football Podcast. Mitchell, still riding high after Sunday's festivities?
Yeah, I mean, it's hard not to when you sneak out a win the way that they did, and you're headed into a game against a division opponent at 6-2, the best you've been since 2008. You got to feel okay about yourself.
So let's start off with your view of it. Yours was, five seats down from mine. I just blacked out, so for all I know, like, we may have high-fived, and I don't even remember. What happened to you, around you, for you, when you saw that Noah Brown caught the football?
I mean, you know, I've had a lot of people ask me. The press box is generally a pretty stoic atmosphere. They're, you know, kind of hardcore press rules. You don't cheer in the press box. And that ball went up in the air, and kind of everyone rose, I think, at the same time. And when it completed, there were a lot of, oh, my God, holy bleeps, different things you can't say necessarily on the radio. And I think everyone was just kind of looking around in complete disbelief about it. And, you know, a lot of things that Jaden Daniels has done so far have been pretty magical. And when things are going well, I guess they continue going well. But that was pretty unbelievable.
Whether it was locker room, post game, something you saw online, like, what's your favorite reaction that you either experienced or have seen so far?
I think there's two. Kind of one from the fan perspective. Instead of going straight down to the press conference room, I walked out to the concourse and kind of walked, took a couple of videos amongst the fans. A lot of Commanders cheering, and, you know, a lot of excitement and singing and all that stuff. And one Bears fan walks by and he goes to me and goes, "I thought we were good. I finally thought we had turned it around. We still suck." And it just kind of made me laugh. Like, you know, I can't imagine. It's so wild looking at it from our perspective because it turned out in a positive way. I can't imagine how crushed you have to be as a Bears fan to watch, you know, your franchise quarterback have 33 yards of passing at halftime, throw for a buck 30 in the game. And, you know, think that you're going to escape with a win and then have it turn out that way. It was pretty funny. But in locker room, Kadarian Mathis, who's been a part of a lot of big wins in his career, in his lifetime. He was part of the walk-off win for Alabama to win the national championship when Tua hit Devontae for a touchdown in the back of the end zone. So he's been there and kind of done that before. And he said, even this, he's like, it was so damn exciting. He's like, I shed a tear. I'm not going to lie. And I just thought that was kind of cool. It shows how much these guys care about what's happening.
100%. That's really cool. And, you know, when you're in the NFL, you have inevitably been a part of some winning teams before in your life. And even if you have not been a part of that as a pro, to see how much it means, I guess it would be, I don't say inappropriate, but it would be a bad job by me, Mitch, to not follow up. Like, as someone who's out there every day, how different is the bond between this team and its head coach than anything else you've ever seen at the professional level? Like, you've obviously mostly covered the Commanders, but you've been working for, you know, NBC Sports Washington or whatever the iterations, now Monumental Sports for a long time. You've been around multiple franchises. You've been around pro sports a long time. And there is a professionalism at this level, but they're still human beings. It's still sports. Those bonds can create. And when you see that mean that much to Big Phil and you're around these guys every day, like what, how different is the bond and how would you describe it? The bond that they have with each other, but especially with Dan Quinn, who I think is the centerpiece of it all.
Yeah, I mean, I don't want to say better or different than other teams. It's different than what the Commanders have had, where generally you've had a head coach that's been more of a, you know, a leader, not necessarily, you know, more of a kind of a guy that sits on top than somebody who's kind of intermingling with the players as much as kind of Dan Quinn does. But to me, it reminds me of every other winning team, you know, that you've been around, whether it was the Nats as they were running up to the, you know, World Series with Dave John, or with whoever their manager was. I'm not a Nats fan. I don't really care that much about them. But the same feeling that you had with the Cavs too when they were going on the Cup run. You're seeing an environment where it's not a leader and followers. It's kind of everybody, you know, working together and being a part of it. And I love, you know, the sideline reaction that NFL Network had. And the first thing Frankie Lubu does is run up and, you know, give Dan Quinn a big hug. And I just think that, you know, those are things that are like, you know, it helps when you're 6-2 and everyone's winning and going in the right direction. But you're seeing the type of camaraderie from top to bottom that you see on winning teams and winning franchises.
No doubt. And it was Davey Martinez. Your instincts were leading you in the correct direction. It was Davey for 2019 for the Nats. So
I'm
the hoopla.
I love Davey Johnson, so I just assume that he's always the manager of the.
All right, Davey Martinez, not Davey Johnson. Different Davey.
Yeah.
Anyway, the point is, they won. Good job, and this feels like a team that's winning. They are. They're 6-2. That's excellent. Obviously, there is an entire football game that leads up to that point, Mitch. We spent so much time yesterday on the show, and I'm sure you and JP did on the pod as well, talking about the Hail Mary and just kind of reveling in the glory and the fun of it all and the national spotlight's back on it, because why wouldn't it be on this team? But once you kind of get past that and you go, okay, let's look at this game more holistically and think about it, how it translates forward into the Giants and then ultimately the Steelers and Eagles and Cowboys that are coming up, how did you feel about the rest of the game?
I think the rest of the game, I think a lot of it you have to give some credence to the fact that your starting quarterback is playing with injured ribs. But I think the inefficiency in the red zone is the biggest thing that you need to take, that I took away from this game, at least on the offensive side of the football. You know, for the second time in 8 weeks, they were ineffective in the red zone, had to settle for a ton of field goals, and ultimately created a situation where the Bears, who didn't do anything for the better part of, you know, 2.5 quarters, stepped in and were able to make a comeback. And that's one of those things where winning teams don't let bad teams out of bad play. And they did a really good job last week with the Panthers not allowing them to, you know, get any momentum. I think part of that is the Bears are a much better foe than the Panthers, but they had an opportunity to really end this football game multiple times. And they just continued to settle for field goals and keep the game close and keep giving the Bears a little bit of hope. They allowed Caleb Williams to finally get hot for about a quarter, where he threw for almost 100 yards in the fourth quarter. And, you know, that's a problem. You know, that's something that needs to be fixed. But at the same time, if at the beginning of the season you told me 8 weeks in, one of the biggest issues I had with the offense was their efficiency in the red zone, I would say, hey, that's not the worst problem in the world to have. So I think you got to take everything with a grain of salt, but to me, I think they got to find a way to get a little more efficient in the red zone. I think part of that will be when Jaden Daniels is feeling healthier and they can involve him in the run a little bit more. Part of it is a rookie quarterback in the red zone. Everything is in tighter spaces and happens much quicker. So I think it's part of his growth, and I'm hoping that we'll see that kind of evolve as the season continues.
I agree. I do think it's worth pointing out, for whatever it's worth, in the red zone, you had two plays that are 2 inches from touchdowns. On the first drive of the game, Luke McCaffrey is wide open, and Montez Sweat gets a great pressure that forces Jaden to not quite get enough on the ball to get it before the Bears defenders can come back into play, and they're able to push Luke out of bounds. But if Luke has a bigger foot, he probably toe drags there, and it is real close to a catch. So there's one that's, you know, again, 2 inches from being, or not Montez Sweat being the guy chasing Jaden away from a touchdown. The Ertz play is the correct call, but it is so close. And I think Ertz makes that catch a lot more than he lets that thing get ripped away. Like, he can protect the ball maybe a little bit more on the way down. But it's really close. And then you obviously have the penalties. So I just think it's worth pointing out how close they are. Not to say like, oh, everything's actually fine, but that's the difference in this league, is those finer point details. And the last time they missed on these kind of details was against New York, and they put up 77 points in the next 2 weeks combined. So I do think they have the capability of flipping it around. They just obviously have to do it.
Exactly. And, you know, it's great that they were close, but being close is what led them to settle for field goals. And if they're able to rip off offensive performances like they did in back-to-back games after that Giants game here, then I'm happy to retire that worry. But the other thing that you got to definitely be concerned about, and this isn't necessarily Bears related, but were just some of the injuries that you saw across the offensive line. If Cornelius Lucas isn't able to go, then you know, you're hoping that Brandon Coleman can come back from the concussion that he suffered 2 weeks ago. Lucas left the stadium in a walking boot last week. We'll find out more, you know, tomorrow on those injury fronts. But the fact that the Commanders went out and signed an offensive tackle today probably lets you know that one of those two is probably, you know, still working through what they're working through. And, you know, we saw Andrew Wiley has a big brace on his right elbow. He went out for one play during the game. I think he just got poked in the eye. Biotis had a big wrap on his thumb / the joint there. You know, both Cosme and Allegretti are dealing with, you know, various small injuries. And that happens as this NFL season continues, and it's happening across the league. But the lack of tackle depth combined with the injuries that they have, I think, is what has created, you know, a little bit of concern as you start moving forward. And especially when you look at, you know, a Giants defensive line that gets after the quarterback pretty dang well, it's going to be a big week for injury recovery here in Ashburn.
No, it definitely is. And they signed a tackle to their practice. Unless I'm missing another roster move, is that you're talking about Bobby Hart that they brought in today?
Yeah, he hasn't played a whole lot. I mean, it's been a couple of years. It'll take a little bit of time to figure out what it'll be, but they need bodies out there, because currently Trent Scott's the only other real tackle that they have, you know, roaming around here until they start moving guards out there and, you know, start playing with that positional game that way.
Yeah, and Chris Paul played some decent tackle for them in the preseason, but that's the preseason. They did let a tackle go to sign Hart, so they're getting just a different guy on the practice squad. So we'll see if that guy's, you know, needed on Sunday. Mitch Tischler with us, Course Coast, the Beltway Football Podcast. Real quick, one more thing in the red zone, because we talked about this with some callers in the first hour, and I didn't get a chance to obviously talk about this yesterday, and I actually forgot to bring it up with Logan on Take Command this morning. So I will see what you think about this, Mitch. There's three fourth down decisions of the game that I think are at the very least are worth discussing. Two on the first two drives of the game, they're relatively fourth and short. I think one's a fourth and two, one's a fourth and three, but it's less than fourth and five, and they wind up kicking a 27 and a 30-yard field goal. And then the much more high-risk one is the fourth and 2 inches at the end of the game, where if they get it, they can basically run out the clock. Instead, they punt it away, Bears come down and score, then they need a Hail Mary, and lo and behold, they get one, so we all forget about it. What do you make of Quinn's, I would say, varying week-to-week aggressiveness when it comes to going for it on fourth down for a team that is 10 for 10 in those situations on the season?
Yeah, I think this week, and maybe I'm attributing too much to the rib injury, but I think this week they were, you know, we heard Cliff Kingsbury last week talk about the fact that Jaden's such an alpha competitor, and that, you know, sometimes they're going to have to protect him from himself. And I think we saw that in the game on Sunday a little bit, where they didn't call as many design quarterback runs because They were concerned that he was going to take a couple of big hits, and he did take a couple of big hits. I think some of those fourth down plays are, they're so successful on fourth down this season, 10 for 10, because of the threat of Jaden with his legs out there. And, you know, obviously with more guys around the line of scrimmage, you know, you're talking about a situation where he's probably not going to be able to skate free and get out of bounds and not take a hit there. So the early field goals, you know, especially when your defense was playing as well as it was, I wasn't too up in arms about it. I kind of thought that that was the right call, get some points on the board, you know, let Jaden get comfortable, don't open him up to anything further. And at the end of the game, you know, I see a lot of people questioning Washington punting away on that fourth and one. You're at your own 12-yard line. Your defense has held this team to, you know, to 7 points through three quarters and 13 minutes or whatever it had been. They've been playing extremely well. The quarterback, you know, Caleb Williams, hadn't thrown for over 100 yards. He was completing the ball at less than a 50% clip, less than a 30% clip at that point. And so I understood kicking it away because your defense is playing well, and at some point you got to, you know, you're trusting that they're going to be able to step up and finish this thing off, because the Bears had shown little to no life the entire game on offense. I didn't have too big of a problem with it.
Yeah, I don't have a huge problem with it. I did think, I know Grant was making this point in the press box, that, like, if you go for it and you don't get it and then they score, at least they score quickly, as opposed to you punt it away, you're automatically not getting it. And if they score, you have less time on the clock. Obviously, it's harder for them to score, and at least it should be. It wasn't. They went hot knife through butter because that defense was exhausted. But I do think that it's at least a discussion, and I do wonder what the – I mean, they have a ton of analytics. They've got really smart people in that department now, and Dan's obviously got a feel for kind of how his units are playing, and I certainly don't think it's indefensible. I have a bigger problem with the ones early. I just kind of think that kicking 30-yard field goals is not a thing we should be doing in 2024 in the NFL. We have enough win probability data to know that you're more likely to win the football game if you go for it, because the downside is they have to drive 80 yards on you or 90 yards on you, and that's really hard to do in the NFL. So those are, to me, Mitch, the kind of bigger talking point is not necessarily the finer details, but how it seems like game to game, Dan's aggressiveness meter ratchets up or down and at some level depending on the opponent, which I think is ultimately good, but I do wonder how much the rib had to do with it, back to your original point.
I agree, and I think that's what I like about Dan Quinn and his aggressiveness. You know, like, you think about, like, other super aggressive coaches across the league, and I think Brandon Staley is the guy that sticks out the most, the head coach of the Chargers the past couple of years before they got rid of him. He was this ultra aggressive guy, and it was pedal to the metal no matter what, and it ultimately hurt his team more than it helped it. You know, analytics are an awesome piece to the NFL puzzle, but there's more to the calling of a particular play or the design of a particular play than the analytics of, you know, you score more points doing this than that, because there's a human element to all this. They're not robots out on the field, you know, that are making plays. And so I think that's a positive quality in a coach, is to know his players and know his team and know when it's time to ratchet it up versus when it's time to, you know, take a step back and take the points when you can get them.
100%. And, you know, analytics are not a certainty. It's not 100% you should do this or that. It's, you are 60% here, 40% there. But if, say, I don't know, you have a quarterback with a rib injury and a backup left tackle who's not playing great and a banged up offensive line, you need 2 yards, you might kind of know you're on that 40% side and that it's actually not the right move. And so you have to manage a dynamic game at all times. That is why head coaching is hard, on top of many other reasons why head coaching is hard. And obviously Dan Quinn's doing a good job, because they're sitting at 6-2. Mitch Tischler's talking about it each and every day on the Beltway Football Podcast post-game. You can catch that also live on the Monumental Sports app. Mitchell, always a pleasure, sir. I'll see you in a couple weeks in the press box, and we'll talk to you next week after the Giants game right here on the Hoffman Show at 5.
Absolutely. Looking forward to it, bud.
All right, that is Mitch Tischler, everybody, with us every single Tuesday, a Tischler Tuesday, here on the Hoffman Show. Anthony, real quick. Because we have like a minute here before we need to go to the old commercial break. And then we have a Jaden Daniels tape Tuesday, which is very exciting. What did you like? Were there any of those fourth downs where you were like, why aren't they going for it right now? Or is it only maybe now that I'm talking about that you're like, wait, maybe they should have considered that?
To be honest, I think the points you made about the first half getting down, I think we kicked the 28 yarder. We were on the 11 yard line. I definitely would have been more comfortable going with it. I feel as though if we were playing a team like the Bengals, for instance, or, you know, another one of these high-powered offenses where you got to meet aggression with aggression, I think this would have been a situation where we would have opted to go for it. Like, we wouldn't have thought twice about it. The fourth and inches, I was definitely super tempted to do it. But I did understand we are inside of our own, I guess, 15, 20, or 30, or whatever it was. And that would have been a lot of pressure on the defense. But the thought crossed my mind. I don't think I would have pulled the trigger. I definitely would have been more comfortable going for it early in the game when we were inside the red zone on the other side.
So just to be clear on the details here, the first one, and by the way, if anybody over in Ashburn is listening, like, y'all know how to get my number. I'm open. Like, I actually would love to know what the conversation was on the headset. Are we going here? Because there's a million reasons why you don't do it. From our favorite play here involves Jaden running and we don't want to expose him to the hit and we don't think it's worth it. Two, we just don't think this is going to be a very high scoring game and we think the points are valuable. And obviously, like, it works out it works out in the end, period. They won the football game. But in terms of optimizing their chances to do so, I would love to know what Dan and Cliff and whoever else is involved in that decision are doing. If someone wants to tell me on the low over in Ashburn, y'all know how to get in contact with me. Someone give me a call on a commercial break. But Austin Seibert kicks a 27-yarder after they pass on a 4th-and-2 at the Chicago 8. So if you don't get it, which presumably passing incompletion, or if it's running, it's, you know, you maybe get a yard and then you don't get the second. So they're taking over inside their own 8-yard line. The second one is a little bit farther out. Seibert winds up hitting a 30-yarder because it was 3rd and 12 at the 12, or like 3rd and goal at the 12. So, you know, that one hurt because Eckler, like Daniels hit Eckler at like the 6, and Eckler dropped it. And if he can at least get to the 5 or the 4, then maybe we're talking about going for it. But the thing is, too, with the first one especially, that's the one that hurts. You're 4th and 2 at the 8. You can get a first down. Mm-hmm. That's one of those, too, where I want to, like, I actually think in those situations, like, teams cover the first down so aggressively, you can not want to say steal a touchdown, but you can kind of steal a touchdown in that one. That's the one that I'm like, yeah, what are we doing?
No, I agree. I wholeheartedly agree. Yeah. But I definitely think it's going to be something to monitor. I think they pay attention to these kinds of things. I don't know.
I love this comment in the YouTube chat from Aubrey. This isn't Madden. Kicking field goals and punting is smart football. Aubrey, 5 seconds later, I would have went for it on 4th and inches.
Wow.
Which one is it? Kicking and punting is smart football. I would have done dumb football. Great job, Aubrey.
I nailed it. I think if we're playing the Lions, we go for it. I think if we're playing the Bengals, we go for it. The Chiefs,
Who's definitely going for it? The Lions.
Yes, they are.
Dan Campbell's going for that son of a gun every single time. All right, it's the Hoffman Show. We're on the Team 980. We're always live as well on the free Odyssey app. And when we get back, Jaden Daniels tape Tuesday. This dude put on a clinic on Sunday. It was even better than I thought after watching the tape. You'll hear me and Logan Paulson break it down next.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance, too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
With the second pick in the 2024 NFL Draft, the Washington Commanders select Jaden Daniels.
Jaden Daniels holds the keys to the Commanders' future.
Daniels is going to walk it in for the touchdown.
Take Command holds the keys to knowing how he played.
In the big moment when you needed to make plays, he just consistently made plays.
It's time for a Take Command Tape Tuesday.
Jaden Daniels just lays it out there perfectly. What a throw.
On the Hoffman Show.
They had 481 yards. And for the ways that they struggled, some of the drops, some of the penalties. Dude, on tape, I knew Jaden had a pretty good game. On tape, this thing is sick. Like, yeah. He just continually overcomes bad situations. Hey, all right, you dropped one? Fine. I throw a ridiculous cover two ball to Terry McLaurin that Terry kind of mistimes his jump a little bit, goes through his hands. How about next play, I hit you for 60? How about, oh, there's a free blitzer coming? I see it. Let me run out. Let me hop, skip, and jump over the tackler and get a first down. Like, with his arms, with his legs, Jaden Daniels continues to be that freaking dude. And that is before you even get to the Hail Mary, which, you know, is some combination of skill and luck at the end.
Yeah, and it was really interesting to watch the All-22 because, like, is he the most accurate he's ever been? No. Is he, you know, like, there was some, you know, talking to some other media people, it's all that ball placement isn't perfect, that's on the right spot. I mean, this is maybe, I don't want to be hyper, again, like exaggerate here, but this is maybe my favorite game of his to watch because I felt like the difficulty level defensively was really ramped up. I felt like he had to make a lot of tough throws. I feel like he had to throw under pressure. There was a lot of people in his lap in the pocket. Got to give credit to Cliff. I think he does such a great job of creating space in the back end. And again, you have pieces like Zach who understands how to kind of create separation and find those windows. And I think on the first completion of Zach, it's a little kind of pull concept. So you get a 5-yard sit, a flat, and a dig. Everybody in the NFL runs it. And, you know, Jaden kind of looks down the sit. Edmonds kind of attaches to the sit, hits Zach over the middle of the field. Great catch. And like that seems easy, but throwing the ball over the middle field, manipulating the hook player, like that's big time stuff. And that ball is maybe not the best ball of all time. Zach's got to fall down and get it. But the process to get there was excellent. The deep ball to Terry couldn't have been better. And just his ability to consistently elevate. Like I was kind of like, you know, why did the offense seemingly struggle in at times in this game? And there were times where it's like, oh, we have a negative run, or we've got a penalty, or we have an incomplete pass on first down. And then Jaden Daniels just puts on a Superman cape and scrambles for a first down. And he does that probably 3 times in the game. You mentioned the one where he kind of kicks out and does that craziness. That's a free runner off the nickel pressure, like we just talked about. And I just, again, I don't want to hype him up too much, but in terms of things you appreciate, you're like, man, like this is a really solid game. And I think his stat line is 21 for, 37, something like that?
I got a box score in front of me. He went 21 of 38 for 326 and a touchdown.
And I want to say I charted at least 4 drops, probably yeah. 5. And
that also is like, for instance, another play where he kind of like he elevates and it's this close. First drive of the game, last play before the field goal. Montez Sweat winds up winning. It's a really tough block for Wiley. Yeah. And Sweat wins, flushes him out. And Luke is wide open in the back of the end zone. But because Montez is in his face, he can't get just enough on it that he can get the ball there in time before defenders can recover and get back to Luke. But if Luke has a size bigger foot, he's able to get that toe tap. And to get that ball off in that situation is crazy. Like, and it's that close. So there, you know, you got the 4 drops. You have that one that's not really on him because he's got Montez Sweat in his face. You have a couple others that are like that as well. Like the numbers, when you go 28 for 38 or 21 for 38 for 326 and a touchdown, and it still doesn't explain how good you were in the game, like that's a hell of a football game from a quarterback.
Yeah. And I think it's like the down to down elevation of the offense was pretty cool to see. Like, because again, there were times like where you could tell that they didn't, the Commanders didn't really have an answer offensively, like for what the Bears had presented. You know, like the Bears were kind of winning the down. And sometimes that happens, you know, like you call the best play possible, but, you know, they've got good players too, and it doesn't quite work out. He buys a little bit of time or makes a really great anticipatory throw. And again, that was really cool to see most of his scrambles. I think we were kind of talking about his last one in the game where it's the 3rd and 5. Maybe could have stayed in the pocket, but most of them, he's got a good feel. Nobody's open really. It's a little bit muddy. You don't love it. And you're able to scramble and get a first down on a play, on a, on a look where you're kind of like, man, this isn't exactly what we want. This is a kind of a risky throw. And I think that kind of stuff is just impressive, you know, like his poise and his composure. And we talk about that all the time, but the moment never seems too big. And then to think about that, he didn't really like really practice this week. You know, he threw, obviously, like they talked about the workout that he did on Friday, but like for him to get to this level of preparation and to play with this level of consistency in this game off kind of a, you know, like an abridged or a different type of week structure for him, was pretty impressive, you know. And I saw, yeah, Dan in his presser, like, you know, someone asked him like, oh, you know, Jaden didn't look quite like himself. And Dan was like, man, I thought he played great. Like, I see and I feel what Dan's talking about there, because I think he did a great job.
Yeah, and this is a credit to Jaden and also a credit to the organization and Cliff and how the offensive organization, I'll call it, in terms of how they practice and prepare that allowed them to do it. And I don't think a lot of teams can. One, Jaden is in his virtual reality headset and in his walkthroughs and all that stuff that didn't require him to throw a football. And he just kept doing all of that stuff the same that he always would. And so he mentally was as prepared as you possibly can be. And then also they do all those walkthroughs during the day.
Yeah.
And he was able to participate in those. So even though he was a DNP in actual practice, he still participated in a lot of stuff that he needs to be ready. And that is a credit to, again, how they prepare, which is a matchup with how he prepares and everybody continuing to do their jobs just in case he was ready to go. And then sure enough, he was ready to go. The other thing that stood out to me is some of the throws from an anticipation standpoint that he makes. The Ertz almost touchdown, like that one maybe is a hair late, but it's still like Zach's not quite out of his break fully yet before he throws that. And he's got to throw it like that. And really that's one where if Zach, like I actually think a younger Zach Ertz catches that pretty easily, where he can like go up, snatch it and turn and protect his body a little bit more. And he's just not quite as twitched up as he was in his early 20s, because none of us are. But there's another play to Ertz with 14:26 to go in the third quarter. So this is the third play of the third quarter. They hit a Diami Brown screen to start the quarter. I think this is actually the second play of the third quarter. They hit Diami on a screen for 6 yards. And then Jaden puts a ball literally between five Bears players. I think it's a CO situation.
It's a sale concept. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Oh, it's a sale. Yeah. Cause Terry's running the high corner, and then Zach is running underneath it on a deeper, it's like an intermediate level out. And Jaden has to throw the ball exactly when he does. And it is literally between five dudes, and you're just like, okay, that's what we're doing now. And so I think that's something that's been fun to watch on the quarterbackiness scale, if you will, Logan, is to watch him continue to throw with more and more and more anticipation in more and more situations. And you're not going to see a throw that's more anticipatory and perfect in terms of placement and all that kind of stuff than a throw deep to the outside against in between five dudes to your tight end.
Yeah, and again, like a lot of things going on here. I'm really glad you brought this play up, because it is an excellent throw. I think the play design is also excellent with Cliff. They kind of, you know, getting in this split back kind of orbit motion, put a little window dressing on it. This is a play that they've run a ton this year, and it's good that they've found different ways to kind of formationally hide it. So they pull the backside guard, comes to the front side. They get the linebackers to step up a little bit, but good kudos to the Bears. They get a little bit of depth, right? And so this is NFL open, significantly open, like when he's getting ready to throw the football. But I think it's, like you said, the touch, the layering, understanding that the window's secure. Like, I think the other thing is, like Terry, you mentioned, is running kind of that, I'm going to call it a pylon, like you're going to run that corner, that high corner to kind of clear it out. Understanding that the DB to that side is not looking at you is also a big thing. Like, he is a zone player technically. And so that's something that I really appreciate, is he had a completion also earlier to Zach, and we'll get back to this play in a second, where there's a little bit of pressure. They're trying to take a play action shot, and the DB, it's a linebacker, Edwards, is dropping to a spot, but he's running with his back to the ball, and Jaden throws the football to Zach kind of out and away. And if the linebacker was looking, it would have made an interception, but Zach's able to adjust to it and make the play. But understanding kind of what NFL open is, and thinking about him versus Tampa Bay and how he didn't really understand that yet. Like, oh, the DB's positioned like this, I can make this throw. And I think this is a really good example to your point of saying, oh, the DB, the corner is kind of, or the safety is kind of looking away so that that's protecting the throw enough for me to get the ball there. I can layer this throw up and over this linebacker because of the ball fake, because of the guard pull. It's given me enough of a window, and then trusting Zach to like make a play. You know, it is open at the start, but it closes very quickly. And there was a lot of plays like that, you know, in this game where I thought, man, like that's just a really nice throw. He had a comeback to Terry, same type of deal. He had a couple of those like in breaking routes over the middle of the field where he's throwing with good anticipation, gets the ball to him. So yeah, man, like I know we don't want to gush about him too much, but like he did some, each week he seems to be getting better. And in a week where he didn't practice, it's also very cool to see him continue that improvement.
Yeah, for sure. Other things that I really liked is just the intentionality of getting Terry the football in key situations. Even like to the point of at the end of the game, the play before the Hail Mary, it's like, which guy do we want to run the out? Our best player. Like there's some stuff of that with Cliff. And then also there's some big spots where I think Jaden's clearly looking for Terry. So Terry 5 for 125 in this game since week 2. Where the first 2 weeks, his numbers were not that great, struggled a little bit. I think Cliff was figuring out how Terry really should be getting the football. Since then, 6 games, he's had 98 yards or more in 4 of them. 300-yard games and a 98-er, and then 52 and 53 in the other one. So that's really good stuff to see between Jaden and Terry. I think the other thing that I would wonder is the Bears were able to do obviously some stuff in terms of preventing them from scoring. We talked about how a lot of that was self-inflicted, the penalties, yeah. That. But is there anything that you see, and I'll open it back up to the whole offense, not just the run game or not just the pass game here in Jaden. Is there anything that if I'm New York this week, if I'm Pittsburgh in 2 weeks, if I'm Philly in 3 weeks, that I look at this tape and go, oh, okay, maybe this is something that we should do because this Bears team did a better job stopping this offense than anybody else has in weeks.
Yeah, I don't know if there's anything that jumps out. I think obviously the thing that I came away with is the 8-man boxes versus the run, kind of making sure you have enough resources allocated to that is going to make it tough. I also thought some of the stuff they did in lighter boxes, so even when they were in 2 shells, the line movement stuff was interesting. And it seemed to present enough issues for the offensive line in certain situations that it just decreased the rushing efficiency enough that we're talking about it today. I think the other thing was the blitz, like how we're calling our protections, I think was the other thing that I noticed in this. Like you could maybe exploit some of those. Oh, we got the rotation here. That's the guy we're working to. Oh no, we're bringing it this way. But that's just kind of good ball. You know what I mean? That's just like good football 101. And so I don't know if teams will adopt some of that stuff, but those things kind of popped up. But on the whole, like to your initial point, like there wasn't anything egregious that I thought, because like you said, they did move the football. And if it's not for 2 illegal men downfield, there was a offsides in the red zone.
Had a really bad drop early in the red zone.
Who?
Noah Brown.
Yeah, he did. Really he had bad a drop. Bad, like a bad.
What happened
like
to that bad guy by the end of the game, by the way? Did he make up for that at the
I
end?
Think he did, yeah. But I mean, those are 4, like on 4 drives into the red zone or low red, where like we were in total control. Even the one to Zach Ertz, like that's a really tough catch. And I'm not like, this is not me saying, oh, Zach's got, you know, Zach make the play. But like even that play, it's like, that's a legitimate, those are legitimate 5 opportunities right there where we should be getting probably touchdowns. So as much as you want to give credit to the Bears, like if we make the plays or the offense makes the plays that they're supposed to make, I think we're probably okay. And again, if Jaden keeps elevating, and the offense keeps elevating. Because like Cliff again, we talk about Cliff a lot. He does such a good job of creating these opportunities for these athletes. And then Jaden does a great job of executing it. So the whole picture kind of works really well together. So to me, it just comes down to executing. And this isn't executing like, and I know in years past, I'm like, the offense has to execute better. It's like, it's well schemed. It's well designed. There are people open, there's space. We just got to hit some of these throws, hit on some of these opportunities and not shoot ourselves in the foot.
Yeah. No penalties and catch the football. Yeah. And like Jaden, twice more, can you be more accurate? Like on 38 throws where you were mostly accurate. I mean, that would be like, now we're getting back in the Cincinnati, like 80, 90% territory. You know what this game actually reminded me of though, Logan, to wrap up here. This reminded me of the New York game the first time around. They won. They shot themselves in the foot and couldn't finish any drives. And the next, what is this, five games that they went on, they scored 38 against Cincinnati, 42 against the Cardinals, 34 against the Browns, 23 against the Ravens, and then 40 against Carolina. So if this is the little bit of a wake-up call to like, hey, let's lock back in on some of the details, let's learn our lessons, to use Dan's language, then I look out. Look out, New York, who, by the way, lost last night and benched Deontay Banks. So good times there. Things are going great for Big Blue. We'll see what they can do, because Trustway barely punted in that. Or was that game he didn't punt at all, or did he punt
at all
in
that game?
Yeah, back-to-back weeks he didn't punt. So good times. Good times. So we'll see how they correct all that stuff coming up against the Giants on Sunday.
Want more from Craig and Logan? Subscribe now on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts. More Hoffman Show next on the Team 980 and the free Odyssey app.
It's the Hoffman Show. We're on the Team 980, and coming up at 6 o'clock, our NFL tier rankings. We will break down every team in the NFL, where they fit, what neighborhood they belong in, and do the Washington Commanders finally crack the elite contenders? The what do we call it? Not the elite contenders.
Prime.
Prime contenders. That's it. Thank you, Anthony. It's just my name's on the show, but we all know that it takes a lot more than me. It takes you. That's a lot more than me.
Yeah, two is more than one.
Yeah, and the sum is greater than the whole of the parts. That's what we try for on this show.
That's good math right there. That's a good process.
Teamwork makes the dream work. Any other analogies we want to throw out there?
I think that's enough of the analogies.
Again, look at you playing your part. Real quickly, before we get to that, Anthony, how about them Zardos, baby? Yeah, Wizards on the board. They get a win last night over the Hawks. They were down big, then they were up big, and the Hawks came back late. And Bilal Coulibaly, man, the job he did defensively on Trae Young, 0 of 12 in the middle of that game, Young against Coulibaly, tremendous job. But I think my favorite part of this young Wizards season, Ant, is just how they're deploying everybody. I wasn't fully locked into this game, admittedly, because I was furiously watching back the All-22 to be ready for Take Command this morning, but I was kind of watching in the background, and, you know, every time I look up, you're like, oh, that's an interesting lineup. Oh, that's an interesting lineup. Oh, look who's on the floor. It's guys like Keyshawn George playing big minutes. He played 22 minutes again last night, including closing this game as Kyle Kuzma went to the locker room late, still awaiting the word on him. Kyle, who got back in a much more aggressive mode last night, also shot it better from three, 25 points before he exited the game. But it was interesting, too, like late in this game, they put the ball in Bilal's hands quite a bit. Eventually, they're like, okay, let's get the ball in Jordan's hands, and he hits a step back three killer. But Kispert's playing really important minutes. You know, Bub plays above 20 minutes again in this game, but they tighten the rotation down a little bit. And I do wonder, you know, if they play a few more guys on Wednesday against Atlanta, knowing they got the same team a couple of different times here as they continue to tweak and experiment. But the other thing that I thought was interesting in this game is Jonas Valanciunas starts and plays 22 minutes. So they move Sarr down to the four, and Bagley plays only 4 minutes in this game. But it's interesting to watch how they're deploying, you know, and whether it's a guy like Johnny Davis, who is a DNP coach's decision, Anthony Gill, who's been in, you know, been in and out some more and less over these first three games. You know, Patrick Baldwin Jr. has played pretty well in the first couple of games, DNP coach's decision. I'm curious to see how they continue to experiment in kind of this season of experimentation that they're throwing at. But in the fourth quarter last night, they scored 37 points. They're getting up and down. You know, they take 44 threes in the game. They hit 21 of them, which is fantastic. And they're just continuing to tweak ways to make sure they get the most out of their young players. And it's kind of fun to watch them experiment in real time.
I mean, I think that's also just the beauty of us being in this second stage of our rebuild. Just being able to just experiment, see what our guys can do, and also just putting the young guys out there so that they can get the reps. I think we saw this with OKC. They were young. They got a lot of experience. They got to get up and down the floor. And the fact that, you know, it resulted in a win yesterday, I think that points for good signs because it shows to us we can play with some of these teams that are already, you know, sort of kind of contenders, but not really. I mean, yeah. we're in the East, so
yeah,
you gotta take that.
There's that. Well, I mean, look, Atlanta had the number one pick last year. I know they won the unlikely lottery, but, like, that's not a good basketball team.
No.
I think that another thing that's kind of interesting to watch is the Jonas minutes, because Valanciunas is really good. I hope he won't mind me spelling this, but I was talking with David Aldridge in the press box before the game on Sunday about the Wizards a little bit, and he's like, man, Jonas can mess around and win them a couple of games. Like, he's a good basketball player who knows how to win, and so they gotta be careful with his minutes if they want to be, you know, playing capture the flag, if you will. By the way, Cooper Flagg signed a Gatorade deal today. But it's going to be interesting to watch because what they did in Oklahoma City early on with Shea was they, you know, CP3 got that team to the playoffs. And then CP3 leaves, and then they take a step back, and then ultimately take a huge leap forward.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's going to be the fun thing to watch is, like, I think Valanciunas can insulate Sarr a little bit and let him do some different stuff. And Sarr, that dude plays hard. It is fun to watch him play, even if he's still very much figuring it out. But, like, he's doing the things they're asking him to do. Like, he's taking threes. He's not good at it yet, but, like, you got to get used to taking them, and then you improve your shot over time. But it's fun to watch, which I think was the hope this year. It's like, I know they're not going to win a ton. Congrats to them for winning the other night. And if they win more, great, cool. Obviously, I think the best thing long term is to have a great pick in this draft. So, you know, maybe not too much if we're saying the quiet part out loud. But realistically, like, at least let's make it fun. And through three games, I think they've been competitive in the first two until they just were overmatched at the end. And then last night, yeah, that was pretty fun, being competitive down the stretch and seeing the young guys get after it. So next game for the Wizards tomorrow. Of course, you'll hear it here on the Team 980 pregame at 6:45. Tip off at 7 with Dave and Glenn. Coming up next, though, it is our NFL tier rankings. Oh, buddy. Commanders, prime contenders, might be about that time.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.